Welcome to the good, the bad, and the ugly of self-storage, your go-to podcast for mastering the self-storage industry. Join host Michael Cunningham and his son Dylan Cunningham as they share insider knowledge, firsthand experiences, and practical advice. Each episode, they dive into real stories from lucrative deals and strategic renovations to the challenges and pitfalls that await. Whether you're a seasoned operator or new to the industry, learn how to succeed, avoid common traps, and seize great opportunities. Tune in to hear their journey, lessons learned, and secrets to making your storage facility a success. Unlock the potential of self-storage with us.
Welcome back, everybody, to the good, the bad, and the ugly of self-storage. This is episode 11, and it's a very special episode. We have our first guest speaker on the show. I'm your host, Dylan Cunningham. As always, my dad, Mike Cunningham, he's the one with all the experience. But today we have someone who we think you guys are going to learn a lot from. He's fresh off developing his very first RV self-storage facility. He's here to tell us what went right, what went wrong, and everything in between. I'd like to introduce Michael Bailey. He's a commercial pilot, a husband and father, and now the proud owner and developer of 1776 RV Storage in Cameron Park, California. So Michael, thanks for being here. Let's start from the beginning. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, your family, and your career in aviation?
Sure, yeah, Dylan, thanks for having me here. So I started out flying. I've been flying ever since I was 15 years old. I got the bug for flying from my grandfather. He flew flying boats with Pan Am. And then I just kind of had
flying
my...
boats, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a long time ago. Then in World War II, he flew in the Pacific flying cargo type stuff and whatever, basically flew whatever they could out there. So then I went to school for a little while. I was playing football and then got done with that and went, well, I don't want to major in economics, so I headed out to North Dakota and went to school out there, and that's where I got my degree in aviation and then flight instructed and then got on with a major airline after a little while.
Yeah, that's a great accomplishment. Good for you.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, so, Michael, before we get started with this whole thing, I always want to say a couple things. I always want to say that this podcast is for entertainment purposes. It's intended for a springboard for anyone interested in self-storage and potentially considering building or owning self-storage. Always consult with professionals that specialize in this type of work before you invest. So, Michael, at the end of the day, what really got you interested in RV storage?
Well, I think I'm a little bit of what's called a serial entrepreneurial spirit within me, in that I had started a construction company. A real good friend of mine came to me and said, hey, he had gone through some hard times, had declared bankruptcy with a construction company, but he still had his
contractor's
license, yeah. And I had just gotten on with the airline, and I was like, well, shoot, at some point I'm going to be making enough money that I could probably use a business to help offset, you know, a high W-2. And so we started this construction company. It became pretty apparent pretty quick that we did not see eye to eye on things, and after I stuck with it for about 7 years, and then it was not only that we didn't see eye to eye on it, but it was also becoming a lot more work than what I thought it would be. And so being a full-time pilot and then coming back and having to be a full-time bookkeeper in the construction company, I was like, okay, well, let's try to find something that's a little more hands off. So we came to an agreement, mutual agreement for me to get out of that, and so then I started the storage facility after that.
Perfect. So was it just residential or was it commercial? What were you developing?
Mostly commercial stuff. Yeah, that was what he was into doing, tenant improvement.
Okay.
Things.
Got it. And how did you find the land for 1776 RV storage?
Well, you know how it goes. I'm sure. Like once you hatch this idea of, hey, I want to do this, then you start looking on LoopNet and various other places, and then you start looking at pieces of land, and you see them, and you see, oh, hey, this one's been on here for like 365 days, and the first thing that pops in your mind is, what's wrong with it?
Exactly.
You know, how long has it been on there? Why has it been on there for that long? And so it took a little while, and then I eventually found the piece of land that I did purchase up there in El Dorado County. And I was able to get for a pretty good price. But again, it was, hey, what's wrong with it?
Yeah.
And it didn't take long to figure
out. Was
it
zoned already for storage?
It was. And there were other parcels of land that were cheaper that I could have tried to go through the zoning, but I had heard some things.
That's a losing battle. Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Yeah.
We discussed that in one of our previous episodes. And yeah, no, those are some high hurdles to jump over.
Yeah.
So did you do a feasibility study?
I did. Actually, the best $300 that I ever spent was I got on that website Fiverr. I don't know if you guys have heard of it.
No.
It's like where all like MBAs go to die or something. I don't know.
Oh, Fiverr. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. We have used that. You could contract anyone, any type of service.
Yeah, and it was great. I mean, granted, you get what you pay for, but I fly airplanes, so I don't know how to write up a feasibility study. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew I could sit here and talk to you about it, but I couldn't put it in words or a presentation that a bank would accept, and I needed to get a loan. And so he put together this thing, and granted, I had to go through and, you know, edit out. It was a lot of cut and paste and stuff, but I was able to put in what I wanted to, and he gave me the whole business plan. He gave me the numbers for it and a spreadsheet for it where I could plug and play, and then I was able to. I had banks tell me no, but I never had anybody laugh at me.
Right.
So it was pretty good.
This feasibility study, where you were using it as a budget as well at the end of the day. So he came up with some of the initial numbers, like what it was going to cost to develop this property.
Yes. Yeah.
He did. And were there details like part of some of the feasibility study, or most of the feasibility studies, specific to self-storage, they'll include things like what is the occupancy of other storage facilities? So what's the saturation in the market? Are you building in a market that already is oversaturated in the product that you're bringing to market, or is there room for growth? And I don't know if that feasibility study had anything in that regard.
So I had, it did. It was a little more, it wasn't very accurate per se, because it was, again, someone who was off in, I think, Georgia,
okay,
who put it together, and they just looked, you know, at random things off the site. What I did, I wasn't too worried about that for myself. I needed to present something to a bank that was accurate enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I had spoken with a fellow named Ron, who owns Viking RV Storage just down the street.
Okay, when we did a little research on you, we saw that Viking popped up pretty quick on the Google search, and they seem like the big player right there.
They are, yeah. And so I figured, hey, this is going to go one of two ways by reaching out to him. He's either going to tell me to pound sand, or he's going to help me out a little.
Yep.
And so he helped me out a little. And we have since, he's been really instrumental in helping me figure out what my site needs to look like, and some of the things that he would have done different, and where I need to have my pricing. And I figured, instead of trying to compete with him, I've been sending over anybody who's been coming to me saying, hey, I want a spot. I've been like, well, if you need something before I get open, go ahead and talk to Ron.
Right.
That's because awesome. like you said, when you search up there, who comes up?
Yeah. He's definitely coming up top of them.
And he's been around. He's never been lower than 98% full. So I figured, hey, if you can't beat him, then try to get him full, and then he will just send everything my way.
Exactly. Yeah, let's kind of finish off the feasibility study. It sounds like you did a little of your own homework in terms of was the market saturated? Was there room for growth? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, sure. So other than also talking to Ron and him telling me, yeah, I've never been below, 98% full, there's a couple others that are right in the area too that are just boats and RVs, and they were all full as well. And then the only other place was converting its boat and RV storage to self-storage. And so I knew that, okay, they're going to be off the map. They're full.
Right. So all those people have to go somewhere.
Yep, exactly. And then I don't know if you know Folsom very well, but they are expanding south, and all these houses are going to be on, they're in between the $700 to $1.2 million range, and they're all going to have HOAs. And so they should be in the income level that they can afford boats and RVs, but they won't be able to park them at their house.
So the HOA will not allow them to park these in front of their house is what you're saying.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if some of these places, I know that some developments are incorporating storage within the HOAs for this purpose.
Right.
And I'm not, I didn't look and see if they are or not.
Right. Right. No, that's awesome. No, at the end of the day, sometimes we have to use our gut. We go out there and we feel and we test the market ourselves. We knock on the door. We go visit these other places and see where the occupancy's at. And if you are living in the region and you're seeing that everybody's running these high 90s, then yeah, there's absolutely room for growth.
Yeah.
And in addition, the region that you're in is in a growth region. They're still building houses. People still want to move there. Cameron Park as a whole is a bedroom community that just, you know, seems to keep, you know, the finger just keeps getting wider and wider, just keeps pushing further and further.
Sure.
So yeah, interesting.
Yeah. I wonder why that last property you were talking about wanted to convert into just self-storage. It seems
well, I looked at it too. And I mean, so my place isn't real big. It's just shy of 4 acres. I can fit about 175 spots if I'm, you know, putting them wherever, every little nook and cranny. If I did self-storage on there, I could have 500 or 600 spots on there. So, but every self-storage place up there that I've talked to, and I didn't do this research beforehand because, quite frankly, the self-storage was going to be too much money for me to get into at the time anyways, mm-hmm. with all the buildings. So I didn't really spend much time on it. But everybody else up there, the self-storage is just really saturated. They're all at like 20, 30, maybe 40% occupancy.
Yeah.
So they're really...
It's interesting. There was a new one that was built, and I'd seen it on the market for a long time. They were selling it, and I don't know if it finally changed hands, but it did.
No,
seem
she
like
wound up. She's kept it. She's been doing a few things creative to.
Yeah. To looked like they built in. A beautiful property, but it was, you know.
Yeah, it's right across the street from mine.
Is it okay? Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Okay, perfect. So, with that all being said, the budget numbers that you came up with, I know they started with Fervor. That guy helped you out, but there's more to it than that. At the end, you know, how did you really determine that your budget made sense to move forward and build this? I think that anyone getting into this that, you know, wants to build storage or an RV storage in general, you know, the fear is like, what does it cost to do this? I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, the land is X and, you know, I'm getting some sort of price per foot to develop this, but we know it always goes beyond that, you know. Anytime you budget for any construction project, and you would know best, Michael, because you were, you know, had a construction company, you always go over budget. I've been in this for a long, long time, lots of projects, and you never go under budget. You always go over budget.
Always, every time.
So how did you go about figuring out these numbers? You're new to it. And what I'm trying to get at is, somebody that's listening that really wants to get involved in this and they're just like, God, this seems overwhelming. You know, like, how did you break this down to a point where you went to bed saying, you know what, I think this is going to be good. I'm solid on this. And at the end, this is going to be a good investment for me.
Yeah, well, I had the added advantage of having the background and knowing people in the general contracting industry. So I was able to talk to my old business partner, and he was able to put together a bit of a budget. But like I told you guys before, he specializes in TIs. He doesn't build things like this. But then through other contacts, I was able to talk to some other people and get a general budget on how much it would cost.
Okay.
And so that was really kind of how I got to it. The real problem that you run into, though, with a lot of general contractors, they don't want to help you with any kind of budgeting because they look at that as a lot of them can't see further than their nose as far as work. And they don't want to waste their time on something that isn't going to happen in the next month. And so you really got to...
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that sentiment. Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's tough to get someone to say, hey, I'll use you if you're in, but I got to need a ballpark to see if I can even do this.
Yeah.
And so what about the permitting and entitlement process? What type of hoops did you have to jump through?
Oh, there were a lot with that. Yeah. El Dorado County is... you know, and to give El Dorado County their due, when you're going through the process, you can see why they have these permits and these people that need to sign off on things. However, you see how the bureaucracy has just grown and grown and grown and gotten to be too much. Because initially you see, okay, yeah, oak tree canopy. Yeah, I don't want to see the oak tree canopy get totally, you know, demolished. But at the same time, it's like, there was maybe an oak tree there. I had no oak trees on my property, but because it was habitat that oak trees could have possibly have been on, mm-hmm. I needed to get a waiver and just various other things like that.
Yeah, these are these barriers to entry that they make it really difficult. You know, some of these things should be definitely brought to the front and say, hey, you know, he doesn't have any canopy. You know, there's no canopy on this property. You know, he shouldn't have to go through that same process as somebody that potentially does have an oak tree on there. It just doesn't make sense. And I know they're heritage oaks. They've been around for 100 years. They're beautiful. A lot of these old oak trees up in that region, and you definitely want to preserve them and save them. But, you know, to a fault, you know, at right. some level, right?
Yeah.
And so, we've been in situations where, you know, we've had to go through the process of mitigating an oak tree. And, you know, you got to plant, you know, 50 trees for the one you take down. And
yeah.
And we're okay with that as well, right? I mean, that it makes sense. It keeps the whole thing going. But you can't put up so many roadblocks. Like, that tree could never come down, and it avoids all, you know, progress moving forward. It gets really tough.
Right. So, and one of the other major hurdles up there was there's a very unique soil up in El Dorado Hills that is called Gabriel soils. I may not be pronouncing that right, but it's only in one spot in the world. And so there's these unique plants that only grow there. And that self-storage facility that you were talking about, they had found it on her property. Well, then Department of Fish and Game draws a big circle around that. And that circle just clipped my property just a little bit. So I had to get a whole environmental study. I had to have them go out there and look during the springtime, the certain time of year, to make sure that that plant wasn't out there. And once it wasn't, then we were fine. But the previous owner that I had purchased the land from, I got lucky in that they had a study done and they hadn't found it. And they were able, then the environmental company, since it wasn't too stale, was able to just go out and do just a quick study. Otherwise,
you
it would
really
have been.
Lucked out. You really did, and that was kind of my follow-up question. Did CEQA get involved in this? That's the California Environmental Quality Act, and sometimes properties, self-storage in particular, in California, they're up against this study, especially in these sensitive areas like Cameron Park, where you have all kinds of environmental issues. So as you discussed, the trees, the soil,
wetlands,
yeah.
Endangered species,
all that. You know, they're It's a big deal
in
that region right there. And those studies can cripple a project in a very short period of time. The problem is you don't know until you purchase the land. It's really difficult to do all this due diligence prior to purchasing something.
Yeah.
So you're going in purchasing something with some blind faith in there. You're going to do as much due diligence as you can, but at some point you're going to have to pull the trigger and buy it and move forward. And hopefully none of this stuff, you know, derails the project.
Right. Well, you know, Mike, you hit the nail on the head in that at some point you just have to take a leap of faith. And I've always said the smartest people that I've ever met in my life never start businesses because they sit there and they analyze everything.
Contemplate it.
And if you contemplate and think about it too much and you look at all the pitfalls, you'll never do it.
You'll never do it, yeah.
Because there's just so many and you're never going to know all of them. And so you just have to at some point say, yep, I'm doing it. And then you have to have the wherewithal to just keep going.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be roadblocks that are just going to seem unsurmountable. And you just got to keep going.
So let's talk timeline. How long did the permitting and entitlement phase kind of take? I mean, for us, it took way longer. On this current project, it took kind of way longer than we were hoping for.
Yeah. So another problem that I ran into is with the engineer that I hired. The first engineer that I hired, we got all the way through to where let me back up one step. El Dorado County has you go through, and certain properties has you go through a design review process. And if you're following that envelope, then you have to present, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And they basically say, okay, fine. Well, that process takes a really long time, like 8 months, 9 months. So we got through the design review process with this engineer, and then we submitted to the planning department. And then it got to planning, had their plan check comments that were going to come through. That was about another 4 months. Now we're pushing a year. And when the plan check comments came back, this engineer that I hired never addressed water. And so he thought that there could be infiltration ditches that would allow the water to go through. But once we got the soils report, which he had before he designed this, there's bedrock, and the bedrock was not going to allow the water to just seep through and go down into.
So let's unpack that a little bit. Did you didn't
pave the entire surface.
No.
It's gravel. So he was assuming that the water would percolate through the gravel, but you guys found out that there's bedrock there, and so that wasn't going to work. So you were going to have to grade the property to probably a pond of some sort?
Yes.
Okay. So elaborate on that.
So he then tells me, once he realized that his plan isn't going to work, that his exact words were, sorry, I don't have anybody that can work on that now, and so here you go. And that was a bit frustrating because I had never pay someone in full until it's done. So that was a tough lesson.
The civil is a big component of development, and I don't think everybody, especially in self-storage, it is one of the most important people to hire, and we've talked about that in prior podcasts. It might be the most important person that you're hiring during the development phase, more important than the contractor or original architect or structural engineer. The structural engineer seems to be the easy part of it.
Yeah.
The civil engineer can make or break a project, and finding one that knows self-storage, understands the region, and especially in California, where we're up against so many adversities.
Sure.
And so elaborating on that, I think, you know, again, the listeners really, I believe, want to hear, you know, what are these pitfalls? Like, it just, you know, it's almost like watching these DIY programs where, you know, they remodel in an episode. You see them come in and remodel a house in an episode. And, you know, they come in for that, you know, initial tear the cabinets down, hit with the hammer, and then, you know, 10 minutes later, they're, you know, everything's framed up, and by the end of the episode, it's all staged and looks beautiful, right?
Right.
And there's so much more to unpack in development than that. It's and unfortunately, these DIY programs, on a little bit of a tangent here, but they don't show typically what, you know, the pitfalls are. You're not seeing all, I mean, behind the scenes what happened to get that product at the end right there. So here you are in your early stages. You haven't even put a shovel in the ground yet. And, you know, your civil engineer basically
says, I'm out.
I'm out.
Yeah. So I had to, that was a point to where me and my wife had to really dig deep and go, is this something that we want to go after? And I had to talk to the investors. One is a really good friend of mine, and the other is my father. And then my wife also took some of her money and invested in it too. And I tell you what, if you've never dealt with having investors and the weight that it puts on you, it's one thing going forward with me losing all just my money. But when you know that other people have entrusted you with it, it is massive as far as the amount of weight that it puts on you and the added stress.
No, I hear it in your voice. And I think that that's just, you know, what people also need to hear is that it you can't take lightly when you're taking other people's money to invest it.
Especially when they trust you with, like, my real good friend. He's very good at doing these. It was all way over my head with the stock market. But he was very good at making money off of his money. And he took that out of that investment so that I could make money for his money. And he's been very patient because I haven't made him any money yet. But we're getting towards the end of the road.
You will.
So to get back to it, we then had to hire another engineer. And this time we went with one that was local in the area who have built them. And the only caveat I will say to that is just never enter into a contract with an engineer that includes time and materials. Get it all in writing and, hey, this is the contract amount.
Yeah.
Because the contract amount was for $32,000, and at the end of the day, I wound up paying this person $95,000.
And still didn't get a completed thing.
Yeah.
No, it's a license to print money. Some of these civil engineers. It's
and the really worst part about it is that they have you.
Yeah.
Because once you have submitted those plans at the county, you can't change into engineers. Mm-hmm. So you're stuck.
Yeah.
There, and if they decide to pull out, I mean, I guess I could sue them, but I mean, at the end of the day, the only one who wins after a lawsuit is the lawyers. So
yeah,
it's like.
And this is some of the stuff we had talked about in the past about the civil engineer and kind of really understanding development as well, like what they drew, like what did their stormwater look like? Was it a detention pond or was it underground storage? You know, what companies did they pick for the underground storage? Is it something that is sourceable or is it some the most expensive company out there? You know, how did they design the drive aisles? With what type of materials did they use? And all of this for a novice, they just don't know,
right?
And so you know, when you're trying to
you know, build something on a budget, and the civil engineer is just trying to get the drawings out there so it could get approved. It's you're on two different wavelengths at that stage of the game, you know. And the bottom line is everyone's on a budget when they're building. Sure. No one's just carte blanche, right?
Right.
So these are like really deep conversations and understanding, you know, talking to prior clients of civil engineers that you can talk to and say, what was your experience like? These are really important things for anybody that's jumping into this for the first time. You find a civil engineer, say, hey, can I, you know, get a couple references so I could talk to some people, right? I mean, that's a big deal.
That is a good idea.
And then you're going to find out whether or not this guy was, you know, upfront and, you know, honest and consistent, and did he finish the project, and are you happy, you know? So anyway, I digress on this because it is something that...
It's huge, and the stuff that we build, and the stuff that I built and the stuff that you build, it's everything. I mean, if you don't take care of water and get the civil engineer stuff down, one, later on, you can flood out your whole entire neighbor. And then that can get real bad real quick. And two, it can just, if the county doesn't sign off on it, you got to go back square one. And it can change your whole entire layout.
Well, what's interesting about your story there is, I've learned something just from this, is that I didn't realize that if there's, you know, bedrock there, that it'll stop the permeation of the water coming through. And so I just figured if you have gravel, that's sufficient enough to, the rainwater is going to, you know, naturally absorb into it and percolate into the ground and you're fine. Right.
Yeah.
But in this case, that's not the case, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Getting back on track. You know, how long from breaking ground to opening did it take? I mean, I'm trying to,
are you officially open?
Not yet.
You're not yet. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. You're close.
I'm real close. Yeah.
Okay.
So it should be.
It's exciting.
It should be end of April. Well, it's exciting, and yet also now I'm like, okay, now I got to figure out how to fill it up and take people's money the right way, and you know, get the credit cards through every time, and you know, is the contract good enough? I hope so. But yeah, to answer your question, so I won't spend too much time on this. So we had to find another engineer. They had to go back through the whole entire design review process, get all the way through it. Once we got the plan check comments done, then we could build. And that whole entire process, we broke ground last November. And that was 2.5 years from the time that I had purchased the land.
Yeah. Gotcha. See, I don't think a lot of people realize that as well. And that's the kind of stuff we want people to really understand, you know, what it really takes to develop something. And this is just an RV storage with some canopy coverage. This isn't, you know, a full storage facility with buildings everywhere.
Yeah.
And so, you know, not that this is not a big property, this is a big property, but there's so many more moving parts on a self-storage facility where you got an office and, you know, restrooms and plumbing and, you know, sprinkler systems and so on and so forth. Right.
Yeah. I mean, as my wife always likes to point out, it's when we first bought the land, I was like, oh, hey, yeah, we'll just flatten it out a little bit and be able to park them right out there.
Exactly.
She likes to bring that up all the time. I'm not sure why.
Exactly.
Did you develop it all at once or like in phases?
Yeah, no. So we just hit go and went. So
okay.
I kind of, it being so long, I kind of ran in, like I mentioned, I needed a loan with it. And so I got an SBA loan and I wound up doing what, have you ever heard of a ROBS, a rollover for business startup?
Mm-mm.
So I own the land in what many people will probably consider not the best way. It's owned under the corporation. But I had to do that because what I did is I created 1776 RV Storage Inc. Then I created 1776 RV Storage 401k. And then I was able to take my rolloverable 401k from the airline and put that into the 1776 401k.
So that's like a self-directed at that point, right?
Yes.
Okay, and so you basically took your IRA money and you were able to invest it directly into this asset, this piece of land.
Yep.
Interesting. Good for you.
That's cool.
Yeah, well, it wasn't my brainchild. I ran into a wall with the bank and they said, well, talk to this company, Guidant Financial, and they do these ROBS. And so I was like, okay.
Okay. You know. I never heard that acronym, but I know self-directed IRA. So,
yeah. So that's how. So, anyways, getting back to that, I was running into a wall with the bank, and that these loans have been pulled 2.5 years ago, and I do have some COVID perks within them, and so I wanted to keep those, and that was gonna turn stale if we didn't get the whole thing built by end of May, I believe. And we're going to make that time frame, but we're getting into what I will probably, if I have any PTSD about this whole thing, it will be building during the rain.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it if you...
Yeah, so we've talked about that a little bit too on a prior podcast. The current project we're on right now, we went ahead and base rocked the entire property, did all our elevations and compacted it. So while we went through the rainy season right here, there was no mud on the entire site. So yeah. It really was nice. We were able to use our equipment and move around. And so it worked out absolutely perfect. Yeah. So I wanted to just drill down a little bit closer on your financing. So you bought the land with the self-directed IRA, and then to for all the building and fees and everything, was that a construction financing, or how did you handle that financing?
So I had to get all the way through. I had to have permits before the bank would fund any loans. So purchasing the land, going through all of the engineering, and paying for the permits was all out of pocket and not built within the loan.
Got it.
And then the SBA could then fund the construction and operating capital with it.
So was that a 504, or do you know which SBA loan that is under?
Yeah, it wasn't a 504. It was the 7A, I think.
Exactly.
I think it's 7A.
Yeah. And usually they want to see some self-storage experience, and in your case, we know you didn't have self-storage experience.
Right.
How did you overcome that hurdle?
Well, through the business plan, through the financials, through the feasibility study, and having the experience with running the books on the construction company.
Okay.
And then I'm very blessed in working for the airline. They could see that the financials, it wouldn't be a lot of fun for me to have to fly as much as I would have to, but I could make ends meet.
If you had to, okay.
If I had to.
And that was kind of what satisfied them to push forward.
And the fact that we have lived relatively frugal lives. We don't have a huge house. We don't have a bunch of toys. Our credit is very good, and our debt to income is pretty good.
Nice. Again, I just think these are really important things that our listeners would love to hear. Like, what did it take, and how was it to finance?
And where do you have to position yourself to be able to get someone to say yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and what was the with SBA? Some of the programs are as little as 5% down. Were they looking for a specific?
Well, that was the great thing about. So I did have to come up with the money for the land. I had to come up with the money for the permits. However, the SBA is able to count that as down.
Okay, got it. Nice. So that was your skin in the game.
That was, yes.
Perfect.
Yeah. Moving on, I kind of wanted to ask about how you chose the architect for the project, did they have a whole bunch of experience? Was this guy a true vet, or was he a rookie? I mean,
yeah. So the architect was in house with the second engineer that I went with.
Okay.
So they were in house with that civil engineer.
Gotcha.
I did originally have. I wanted to put a big wash bay with like a 6 foot high plank and self wash thing, and I did have a different engineer develop that. But PG&E told me it was going to be about $300,000. To get power there. And I went, okay, well, I could not quantify how much more in rent I could charge with that wash bay on there versus without it. And so therefore I couldn't.
Okay. And so I'm looking at your map here. This is, I actually really like this, whoever created this for you.
That's Fiverr again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They did a nice job. So it did say wash bay on here, but so that
was. It's like a wash station.
It's a wash station.
Yeah, so it's a little better than a sponge and a bucket, but it's not much more than that.
And at this stage, there is no power at this facility. You're using solar on.
It's all solar.
It's all solar.
Yes.
Lighting, gate operation.
Yep.
Everything is solar.
Cameras. Yep.
Interesting. Yeah. Were you the owner builder on this, or because you have the general contractor background, or did you hire a general contractor?
I did hire a general contractor. I hired the company that I was partners with.
Okay.
So we had to, I had to make sure that I was fully removed from the company and have it about a year and a half out of it, per just to show that, hey,
you didn't have a liability on
that.
Right.
And, And I mostly went with them for, we got a couple other numbers. He was the most competitive. There was another guy who had specialized in doing these that, you know, maybe hindsight 2020 could have got it done a little bit quicker. He had a couple things in there that we had missed. But
was that one of these companies that specialized in canopies and RV storage in the region?
He had just done a bunch of them up in that area.
Up in that area. Yeah. Okay, got it.
Who handled the grading site work?
That was a company called Grade Tech. And that guy, Bill, who owns Grade Tech, is an amazing individual. He's one of those guys that, even though you're dealing with, you know, large numbers of money, a handshake and an okay is all you need.
He's an old school guy.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, at one point we had the state water board out there. We had muddy water running down the site, and him and the project manager and myself were out there in the middle of the night, and he's digging a ditch so that we can divert the water before we had the ditch done for the whole wall done for the storm pond. Water
there, yeah.
Yeah, just so that way I didn't get totally reamed by the state water.
Yeah, back to developing in the rainy season, and it's very tough, and it's amazing what water does really quickly to soil that's not, you know, compacted, or it starts eroding really, really quickly. Yeah.
But Bill really, he went above and beyond in a lot of
ways. Yeah, no, nice to hear that. In fact, we've got a similar story here at this project we're doing right now, Hensley Paving and Grading, and one things we did outsource, and it was the same thing. You know, came in with a handshake, and just as you said it beautifully, these are big numbers you're working with here, and he was old school in the sense that I'll be there on this date, and I'll have my equipment deployed, and we shook hands, and we were just blown away, you know, and everything he said, he was on time and did it. There was no extension on the budget, nothing. It was just a great experience. I would plug him any day, every day.
Yeah.
He was just, so it's awesome to hear that you had a very similar story. Those are the goods. There's still bads and uglies coming. There 100%.
Are, yes.
Any special inspections or like surprises, you know, now that we're on this like construction topic right now, I mean, anything that like came out of the ordinary or out of the blue?
Well, we had originally had the lights out there, and then in the change of the design review from the first engineer to the second, somehow that footing got lost and was not included in the second submission. And so I got to hand it to the inspector up at El Dorado. He was awesome. He came out and he said, hey, as long as you build them to this, and this, we'll be good.
Nice.
And the project manager there, he was that for the general contractor. He was amazing, and he took pictures, involved the inspector there the whole time, and so we were able to get that signed off.
Awesome. Yeah, that's another important just aspect of developing is, you know, is the inspector going to be a nice stand-up guy like that, or is he going to cause some trouble?
Right. I knew he was going to be pretty good because I loved all, you get to know the people at the planning department when you do these
things.
You
have to. You have to.
And you have to go in there and you have to realize that most of them cannot make a decision. They may want to, but they can't. And so you have to have a good attitude when you go in there. Do not fail the attitude test. And we were sitting there going through all this stuff, and all of a sudden the inspector walks in. He goes, oh, yeah, I've seen this stuff. Oh, yeah, that'll be fine. He was the first guy that could actually make a decision. And he was really instrument in getting it done.
So to kind of wrap up the construction aspect of this, couple things. One is we know it took, you know, it's up to 2.5 years at this point to get to this point. Secondly, we kind of got a feel for how you put the budget together and how you finance this thing. We didn't really talk about like the fees, and I don't know if you know these numbers offhand. What's the size of this property to start with? How many acres are we talking about?
It's 3.75.
Okay, so it's 3.75 acres, and about 185 spaces, you were saying, roughly.
Yeah, roughly.
And about 40 of those are covered, spaces, right?
Just about.
What did the when you talk about the entitlement and fee process, do you have a number of what that cost? A lot of people don't understand that that is a big portion of your development costs. Yeah. They think that it's just the development cost. Oh, it's $40 a foot to build or whatever that number is. And they don't take into consideration, well, we've already talked about some of the extreme numbers of paying your civil engineer. What was the actual cost to the building department for the permits?
It was roughly all total between building department, DOT, everybody else that wanted to have their hand out, approximately $80,000.
Yeah. So that's for RV storage. No big buildings involved or anything. Right. And that was $80,000. So you can imagine if you put buildings on here and you're up against that and you got to go into the school bonds and all that other stuff, you would probably triple that number all day long, not quadruple it.
Yeah. And then don't ever forget fire sprinklers.
Yeah.
They require them and everything. They almost required me to have them just on the
covers. Just on the canopies.
Yeah. Wow. I'm thankful that I was able to talk to someone at the fire department that was able to see the logic.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you're not open officially and it's going to happen here in May. Are you planning on managing the property yourself or are you thinking about a third party management? What's your thought process?
No, we're planning on managing it ourselves. We live 5 minutes from where the property's at.
Okay.
And, we plan on, Ron had told me, you know, part of the best way to make sure that stuff doesn't leave your property is to interview and meet everybody that's going to be storing on your place. Have your prices just a little bit higher and you'll keep nicer stuff on there and nicer stuff will stay on there and not walk away in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're going to manage ourselves. And
a lot of times there's a year of the RV that they'll allow, you know, anything below a, you know, a 1990 or something. We just don't store, or, you know, put some sort of restriction
sure.
in place.
I mean,
it's sometimes hard to do that. You're kind of segregating, but I've heard people do this.
Yeah, and I mean, if it's some nicely restored, you know,
of course,
classic Airstream, then
yeah, that's a different story.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
What software or technology do you plan on implementing in your property?
So, in comparison to everybody else in that whole area, I decided to go big on cameras.
Okay.
Because I knew I wasn't going to have a live-in manager. I am going to have somebody patrol it. He patrols the whole area. 5 to 6 times a night from
wow.
like 11 to 5 a.m.
Wow.
And I'm going to have him, he'll have access to the app, and these cameras have AI developed into them that can they just learn between human and animal. And you can also set up parameters on the camera view of it. So even though it's seeing this whole room, it says, okay, only if a human walks in this area, set off the alarm. And
very
so
cool.
They were not cheap. And I haven't run them yet, so I'm not sure how happy I will be with them, but they look great on the videos.
Yeah, we'll have you back on when you have an opportunity to check that out, because that's a big deal. I mean, cameras are a big part of security in the self-storage business, and you're running these also without power. I'm assuming this is all solar-driven.
All solar, yep.
Yeah, so that's a big deal. And so how are you handling the Wi-Fi out there?
It's cellular.
It's cellular. Okay, so then you're... Yeah, your whole setup is very interesting because there's a lot of people that are going into these treasury markets or even secondary markets where, you know, they want to do like a manless operation just like you're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, to not have to bring power in and get up and running, that's a really cool concept to be able to – the technology's there for us to make this happen.
Yeah, it seems to be. And I did get the option with the little megaphone and the blue and red lights just so – that way, if I see an alert, I can yell at somebody.
That'd be cool. That's great. Hey, you.
Right, yeah.
Stop stealing.
I'm going to unleash the dogs at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
So, speaking of access, is the property gated? Do you have, set access hours? Is it 24/7?
I'm initially going to do 24/7, I think.
Okay.
Just because I want to, talking to Ron, there's some people that, which I was, unbeknownst to me, he has people that store from the Bay Area that exclusively camp in the Tahoe area or east. And so they want to not have to tow their trailer up through the Bay Area and they pick it up in the foothills and go.
Perfect.
And then he also has people that store from Tahoe below the snow line. And so with that, people could be getting there at a lot of different times. Another feature of the cameras that I have is it has license plate recognition.
Nice.
And I can program each license plate on who should be there. Perfect. And who should pick it up.
Yeah.
And if one comes in that shouldn't be there, then it will give me an alert and also the security guys so you can go over there and check it out.
So full disclaimer, you haven't used the product yet and we're not endorsing it, but do you remember the name of this?
Yeah, it's LinoVision.
LinoVision.
Yeah, they're okay. Out of Texas.
They're out of Texas.
Yeah.
And do they have an element where they kind of cater to the storage industry or RV?
They do. I think their main bread and butter with the solar units is for remote construction sites.
Okay.
But they've had them in storage facilities. So the reviews look pretty good. Customer service has been really good so far.
Nice. That's all you can ask for.
Yeah. Anymore, you know, when I call, a live human picks up the phone and chats with me.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So one of the questions was software. How are you going to run the operation? So I'm a tenant and I want to rent a unit from you or a space from you. How are you handling that? What is your management software? Are you using a management software or are you guys doing this? How are you doing this?
I am. So I went through mostly just because it's what I knew from the construction company. I'm going through GoDaddy.
Okay.
And using their website development and their charging platform for commerce. And they seem to be right in the same ballpark as far as what they charge per transaction. I think that they were right on the lowest end of it too. But they have integrated the commerce aspect of it to the website. I've created a login for the people to go in there and upload their registration, their
ID,
yeah, and their insurance, and make, model, you know, description, all, basically get all that stuff. And then I'm going to meet them out at the property, and then we'll finish off everything there. Okay. And if there's, I mean, we know in the RV industry, there's some folks that are at the age where they're maybe a little bit challenged with some of the, you know, technology stuff. So me and my wife will be out there too to, you know, fill them in.
Help them out.
Yeah.
So my question is when I was doing a little research on this, I didn't go into detail on the websites of your competitors out there, but the way self-storage has kind of gone in the past, you know, 5, 6 years, 10 years is, and more so than ever, is, you know, kind of transparent pricing online. And you're able to rent online instantly. Oh, I see that unit, that 10x10. I'm able to click on it and go through the whole process right there, get my gate code and move in. Don't even have to talk to anybody. Sure. Never have to meet a manager. None of that. I get it in the RV, just as you alluded. You want to kind of vet your person out each time. You don't want to just give the keys to the kingdom, if you will, to just anybody.
Sure.
But there is that, you know, that threshold where you're creating so many barriers that you almost are deterring somebody from renting. Mm-hmm. And my question is your competitors operating in a similar fashion up there, or is everybody the same way where you kind of still need to, you know, talk to somebody, a live person, and kind of meet them at the property and all? Is that normal? Is that what's happening in your region?
I would say yes and no. The cheaper ones that you drive by and you see that there's old broken down cars parked there. Yeah, they are. Okay. They're, hey, buy a spot, drop your stuff. We're good to go.
Right.
Whereas, like I said, I modeled mine off of Viking. When you go by Viking's yard, it's all nice equipment, newer equipment. The yard is in great shape and there's none of this, you know, he doesn't have people parking like a heating and air company with, you know, 10 different trucks there with, you know, the employee of the week coming through all the time, you know, hey, right, walking through. Oh, yeah, that thing looks pretty nice. I'll remember that, the gate code that I got.
Right.
So that's why I am doing the one at a time. Okay. And, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I will be losing some people, but I'll be gaining the people that I want to have in there.
For sure. Let's talk marketing. How are you planning on kind of getting people into these spaces?
Well, I met Mike at the Boat and RV show, and that was, I had to change my way of thinking when I was there. I originally thought, hey, these people are here to buy boats and RVs. I'll be able to, you know, tell them, hey, you can store it here. But you're really kind of looking for that needle in the haystack. You need to have someone that came down from that region that's buying one there and then is going to want to store it at your spot.
Right.
So it was a little bit disappointing the first day. Then I changed the way I was thinking about it. I went, you know what? Let's use this opportunity to network with all the places that are selling these things. And we were met with you know, open arms by those folks, because it can be the difference between a sale for them or not.
Yeah.
And they get people from all over the place. Wow. And sure, it may not be, we may see one or two from each one, but in a facility my size, it doesn't take a whole lot. And if they are selling to someone from Cameron Park, and oh yeah, by the way, 1776 came right by, a brand new facility, bam, there you go.
Perfect. Yeah, and for the listeners that don't know, Cameron Park is right on the way to Lake Tahoe, and it's kind of the perfect spot to store your RV if you're kind of from like the Bay Area, like we talked about. So there's not a lot of space in the Bay Area to be storing your RV, so it's kind of the perfect little sweet spot to,
yeah, it's right off the big highway headed up to Lake Tahoe, and it's not just Lake Tahoe, there's all kinds of
it's the gateway to the east.
Yep. Sierras are right there, and so there's all kinds of beautiful lakes, and it's not just Lake Tahoe, so it's the perfect, it really is the perfect spot. Absolutely.
I sure hope so.
Yeah. What do you feel sets you apart from your competitors at this point? I know you kind of alluded to the neighbor and all that, but what do you think at this stage of the game? I know that this is something we always think about. We're always like, how do we, everybody's got a roll-up door.
Right.
We all got the same thing,
Yeah.
Like, what genuinely sets us apart? Is there anything that you feel is kind of like, all right, I think we're a little better than our competitors because of this?
Yeah, well, I think that the personal aspect of it and meeting everybody out there, and when they call, they are getting either me or my wife. They're getting the owners. They aren't getting some machine or anything. The facility itself is, my wife will tell you that I am a very stickler for keeping things in a nice order. And so it's not going to have weeds growing everywhere. It's going to have, the landscaping will look nice. The place will look nice.
It's brand new.
It's brand new, and it's going to stay looking brand new.
Nice. Well, you live close to the property, and that's, I think, another thing that I'd like to touch on for a second is because I hear a lot of people wanting to invest in self-storage or develop self-storage or RV and boat storage. And they're, living in California, that's an expensive proposition. And you know that firsthand. And so you raised capital to kind of get to the position you are. You rolled your 401k to get to the position you're at right now. And so a lot of people aren't in those positions. And they'll say, well, I found one in Alabama or, in Kentucky or wherever. And I'd like to, make a go at it. And as the first property, I would highly discourage that. I mean, there's a lot to this. This is a business. This is not passive income. It gets a little more passive as you get full, for sure, but it's never passive.
Sure.
It's a business. And so are you going to have to work at this thing? Absolutely. And being 10 minutes away from this property it's the perfect storm, to be honest with you. Most people can't have that conversation. It just doesn't make financial sense. They're living in a region that is just too expensive to build in that particular region.
Yeah.
So you actually are in a very fortunate position to make this a success just by proximity, by being so close to your business at the end of the day.
And you know your neighborhood and you know your people and you know your demographics where you live. And you, sure, there may be something for $100,000 out in middle of nowhere, Alabama, but you have no idea what you're getting into.
Right. Absolutely.
Absolutely none. You don't know the area. You don't know the roads. You don't know anything. You don't know. I mean, it could be something that, hey, it's here and the freeway's right there. But to get from there to there is 30 minutes because you got to go up to another exit and down. Here I know I am 3 minutes from the freeway.
Yeah. No, super nice. And so I guess that kind of leads into this question of, how are you juggling, being a pilot, a husband, a father, and now obviously the owner of, 1776 RV Storage, making time to come be at our podcast. How are you doing it?
Well, the kids are watching a movie right now, so that was why. But yeah. The flying, I'm really blessed in that since I upgraded to captain, I don't need to do as often as what I needed to when I was a first officer. And so I do have a little more time. Having the facility so close, I mean, it's pop up there for 5 minutes, 10 minutes of meeting with someone, then I'm back and we're good to go, half hour. But yeah, there is, I think that was as far as the building of it and the amount of time and the amount of stress, I was not ready for that. I did not think it was going to be that much. And my family didn't either. And there were many times that it was tough.
Yeah.
So you better make sure that whoever your life partner is, they're in it with you.
Yeah. And I think that's a huge misunderstanding that you're not alone in. I mean, we kind of just said it. Self-storage is a business. It's not just something you just invest in and, you know, get money in your pocket after. It's a business. So you got to put the work in. Looking ahead, do you think you'll ever buy another property? I mean, are you in this for the long run, or is this?
I don't know. Too soon. Yeah, I still have that twitch. I don't know. I've always been a bit of a glutton for punishment. So yeah, I mean, I say no right now, but no, I mean, the idea is, I have never worshipped money. I have always known what money can do. Money can give you time, and time to me is the most important commodity out there. And so the being able to have the income of the storage facility, and like you said, it is a business, but once it gets full, especially full with good tenants, which is what I'm trying to do, it will become a little more passive. And then it will allow me to not have to fly as much. And I'm very blessed in that I can either throttle up my flying or throttle it back. And so ideally, I want to try to fly at the most three-day trips, fly airplanes for 9 days out of the month, and then have this be the passive income and spend the rest of the time chasing my kids around, chasing the wife around, and chasing fish around.
Nice. But yeah, wanted to ask if you had any kind of last good, bad, or ugly stories that were worth sharing.
So the good has been the amount of things that I have learned and some of the people that I've met. And when you meet people that, like Bill with Grade Tech and Daryl, who is the project manager, when you meet people like that, that are, not only are they just doing a job, but they're in there with you, and they take it on as a personal journey with you. That was huge.
Well said. I have the same feelings that you have when you say that.
Yeah, it almost brings almost like a brotherhood.
Yeah.
And then meeting guys like Ron, who was open arms. I mean, he could have easily told me, right, hey, you're up the creek. Right. But he came in open arms. And he actually told me, he said, you're the first one that has ever actually sent a customer to me. I'm like, well, I told you I would. And he's like, yeah, but everybody tells me they will, and they never do.
Yeah. And, you know, we're going to get on a little tangent right there for a second, but we've always promoted with our self-storage managers is to befriend their competition. And, you know, if you're in a market where everyone's full and you're leasing up, that's the first proof. You want to befriend all those other stores. And at the end of the day, they end up bringing us the most referrals.
Sure.
Because they're full, right? They get a call, and people don't want to just say, oh, I'm full, I can put you on my waiting list. They want to help people.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if they could say, hey, I don't have anything for you right now, but, you know, up the street, Michael just built this beautiful property. You should give him a call, right? Or here's his website or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And we always try to offer some sort of concession to those managers as well. Like if they're willing to do that for us, we're going to bring them a gift card to Amazon for $50. Sure. Yeah. Or whatever. Lifetime value of a customer is thousands of dollars. To have somebody bring you a customer for $50 is you're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
And showing people recognition. It matters.
It really
please
does.
And thank you,
yeah,
matters.
Yeah. So besides that one relationship, I encourage you to the other us RV storages out there should be out there shaking their hands,
yeah,
and
definitely
see what we can do as well, because I think it can make a difference.
If you had one big takeaway, like a really hard-earned lesson that you would be willing to share with the listeners, what would that be?
Don't underestimate water. And know if you're going to build during the rainy season, actually now anytime in California,
yeah,
no SWEP. Storm Water Pollution Prevention Plans. Because it will destroy you.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's an understatement. It's just, it's such a big deal in California. Water that hits your property, you have to figure out what's going to happen with that water. You know, these days, it's your responsibility, and you have to have a plan in place. And if you can't get rid of it, then you're not going to build.
Yeah.
And the project we're working on is they require us to keep all the water on our property. So we have to build enough ponds that it percolates into our ground reservoirs. And we have an emergency backup system that has a pump system on it that if we ever go into that 100-year floodplain, that it will pump into the county irrigation system. But, you know, they assume that'll never happen. Yeah. That we have to we had to build our ponds to be able to, based on the historical rainfall here, that we would have to keep that water, and it has to absorb into our property.
Yep.
And if you don't realize that, then it could potentially take up a third of your land just trying to figure out what to do with your water. And you might have did your original calculations on, hey, we're going to build this whole thing out, yep, and those square footages are what makes sense here, and that's how we're going to get our ROI on this property. And you can't if you have to have all these ponds.
Right.
So big deal.
If you could do one thing differently, what do you think that would be?
I would have gone with the engineer that I met at the end of everything being done, because mm-hmm. she was amazing.
Yeah.
Lady named Melanie from RMW Engineering.
Yeah, good shout out to Melanie from...
Shout out to Melanie.
Yeah. Yeah. You're at the end of the day, we talked about the civil engineering and how important it is. So if you could get a referral like that, that's a bit of gold.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay, Michael, finally, for someone thinking about RV storage as passive income or passive income play, any advice for someone new getting into this?
Yeah, listen to these podcasts. Get as much information as you can. Go around and talk to people that have already done it. Because for me, and from what I've found with talking with Ron at Viking RV, people want to share their stories. I mean, it's their life, and it's their passion on what they've done. And people want to teach people. It's just how we're made. And don't go into it thinking that you've thought of everything, because there will always be something that you haven't thought of that will come around and smack you right in the face at the wrong time.
Well, it's awesome, Michael. And, you know, sharing your story is a big deal. And at the end of the day, you took a leap of faith. And that's with some education behind it, but you still had to take the leap of faith. And I think that what the listeners need to hear is that there is a bit of a leap of faith in moving forward on a massive construction project like this. It's not 100% in your wheelhouse. You're obviously a commercial pilot by trade, but what we were trying to bring to the table here is for listeners to kind of hear the back end of what it really takes to make something like this happen. And I think we achieve that goal. And I think there was some great bits of information that you were able to share with our listeners. And, you know, hopefully anybody, listens to that information and does their due diligence, because this is a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thanks again for being here. To the listeners out there, if you guys want to follow Michael Bailey's journey, visit www.1776rvstorage.com. I think that just about wraps it up for episode 11 of The Good,
The Bad,
and The Ugly of Self-Storage. If you enjoyed this interview, make sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and share with anyone you know who's interested in self-storage or RV storage investing. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly of Self-Storage. We hope you found today's episode valuable. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like us, leave a review, and share it with others. For more tips and updates, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also listen to us on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, let's unlock the potential of self-storage together.